So we are in session two, lesson 49 on this.
50. No, not 49.
40.
40. I can type. Okay. On this 15th day of October.
Lahauya.
Hi, our mission with this story hour is to preserve stories of the Native American world shared by Grandfather Roy Wilson. And we're joined again for a time of sharing, learning, preserving heritage for many generations to come. And an important segment of this preservation effort is our lesson in Chinookwawa, hosted by Rainbow and Marsha. I'm going to turn it over to Grandfather. Tonight he has a wonderful story for us and an artifact. And with that, we are going to start our story hour. Klahauya, Grandfather.
Klahauya, Penny. And klahauya to all the rest of you. Well, tonight's story is titled "The Grizzlies Walked Upright." It is a Modoc Indian legend, and as you will discover when I'm telling the legend, the Modocs live in Northern California in the area of Mount Shasta. And the story goes like this. Long before people lived on the earth, the chief of the sky people, he lived up in the sky world, and he was very, very uncomfortable because his sky world was very, very cold. And finally one day, it was just all covered with ice and snow. One day, he took a sharp stone and he cut a large hole down through that ice. And then he started scooping up all the snow and ice and pouring it down through that hole. And he created a large mound that reached almost right up to the sky world. Today it's called Mount Shasta. Not in any case where the Modocs lived. Anyway, he built his lodge there at Mount Shasta. That was his lodge. And he had a number of children, but one day the wind spirit started blowing so hard that he felt that the wind spirit was going to blow his home, his mountain away, that big mound. And as in all of our lodges, we had the smoke hole. He told his youngest daughter, "I want you to climb up there to the smoke hole and shout to the wind spirit and tell him to be more gentle. It's being too rough on them." And he said, "But when you get up there, do not look out over the top of the smoke hole, or you may be blown away." And she agreed. So she climbed up to the top of the smoke hole and hollered out to the wind spirit, "Be more gentle. You're going to blow us away." But she couldn't help but have a lot of curiosity. Why was it that her father, the chief of the sky people, didn't want her to look out? And so she decided just to take a little peek. Oh, she peeked out and she saw the ocean off in the west, and the wind grabbed her by the hair, yanked her out, threw her down hard on the snow, and as He was there for quite a while. Well, the grizzly people, well, before I tell the grizzly people, the next part of this story is that the great chief of the Sky People, he was wanting to know what happened to his daughter. Well, in the meantime, while he was looking, the grizzly, who they walked, the grizzlies walked upright. They moved like people, and they could talk like people. And Grizzly found the daughter lying there on the snow. He took her home with them. And she was raised, a little girl, with the rest of his grizzly cubs. They became like her brothers and sisters. Finally, when she got old enough, she was married to one of those grizzly cubs that had grown up with her. And they had many, many, many grizzly children. Well, finally one day, the great chief of the above found where she was. A messenger had come and told him where she was. He came down, but he was kind of baffled by this whole thing. She was no longer that little girl that he had sent up to the smoke hole. She was a full-grown woman, and she had had many grizzly babies. Oh, when he saw those grizzly babies, he was very angry, very upset that his grandchildren, all these grandchildren, they were grizzly bears, and did not resemble him in any way, shape, or form. And in his anger, he placed a curse upon them. And now you shall never, ever, any of you, ever be able to walk upright anymore. You're going to have to be down on all fours. And you can never talk our language. And so it was. But in the meantime, while he was coming down off the mountain looking for them all, he had his great staff, long staff. And he broke off the lower end of it. Well, first of all, he tapped the snow. In every place where he tapped the snow, there were trees that began to grow. That's the tree line on the snow tree line on the mountain now. And he, everywhere he walked, the snow melted and became rivers. His staff, he broke off the lower tiny end of it. And they threw that out, and a small piece of that, they became fish in the rivers. And the larger piece of that small end, they became beaver and otter. He picked up leaves, dry leaves, and he blew on them, and they became birds. So he created all kinds of animals. The portion of that stick, he created all kinds of large animals. But and following that, that's when he cursed the grizzly, and you can no longer stand upright, walk upright, and you can no longer talk our language. And so it is today. And the Modocs are the children of the beaver, the bear, the grizzly bear. End of story. I now show you my artifact. Can you see this? I'm holding it up in front of my face.
Oh, we can see it perfectly, Grandfather. Yes.
This is a Navajo knife sheath, beaded. A Navajo beaded knife sheath. You can see the shape of the knife that went in it. So, open frame, questions and or comments on the legend or the artifact.
That is beautiful. Well,
I was going to say bears stand upright occasionally.
What was that again?
I said bears still stand upright occasionally.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
When they're looking for something.
Bear can stand like a man, but he doesn't walk like a man.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Bear yet today can stand, but they cannot walk. And bear, grizzly in the Les Modoc legend, walked all over the place. That was he was. You know, he just stood, but he walked on two legs rather than on four.
I have a question. Grandfather, was that a creation story?
Well, it's a little of several different things. It would be a historical, Modoc historical creation story, yes. It is also a story of being obedient. Following the rules. The daughter broke the rule. It is also a story of what happens with curiosity. There are times that it can get you into trouble, as it did with her, whereas on other times, we'd have no creativity if people weren't curious to start asking lots of questions and discovered new things. So it gives us one tiny view of what happens in curiosity. So there are a number of different lessons in it, as well as moral lessons, as well as historical teaching. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, following that thought of creation story, do all tribes have a creation story of their own?
I am certain that they do. There's no way that I can say positively that is true, because I haven't visited all tribes, and I haven't heard the legends of many tribes that I have visited. I've had some very interesting sessions on learning legends of tribes. Back in the 1980s, I held 3 national Indian offices in the Indian world. This caused me in 2 years, with 52 weeks in a year. 1 year, I made 62 cross-country flights in the nation, and the next year, 63. In 52 weeks per year, I lived out of a suitcase. I was in many of our Indian reservations on Indian language, Indian education, Indian health problems, and so forth. And so many times what would happen, we'd have morning sessions, afternoon sessions, and an evening session. When the evening session would end about 9 o'clock, we could go off to our hotel rooms and get some sleep. But there'd always be a few of us that would get the old grandmother or grandfather storyteller of that particular tribe we were visiting and spend 2 or 3, 4 hours telling us some of their tribal legends. And so I heard many, many legends of other tribes, but I haven't heard them all. And in some of those where I did hear their legends, they never told any creation stories. But I do know that many of the tribes, I do know the creation stories of many tribes, and I am confident. I know this is an assumption, but I am confident that every tribe has its own creation stories. Take me a little bit to answer that question, but I felt it was an important one.
Well, it is. And in the creation stories that you know of, do you see similarities?
Yeah, there are similarities with differences in all of them. In other words, when I say similarities and differences, they'll be similar told in different ways. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
While I'm still talking, I want to let everybody know. See my book? This is my latest book. It came off the press on Monday of this week. And it's titled Voices from the Earth Mother. And I think I've talked to you before that what it was like before it came out. And so I'm sure that you're going to really enjoy this one. is strictly Indian.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Does anyone else have questions? Danny? We'll have to unmute you, Danny.
Okay.
There. How was that?
Speaking about all the different stories, yes. All the different tribes, yes. they seem to be proud and they can show off their differences at powwows, and they never fight about who's right and who's wrong. They don't fight about religion.
Yeah, well, I would say they are proud of who they are. And I think that every nation on the face of the earth, they're proud. We're proud that we are Americans, United States citizens. And the French was very proud of being a French. So the Indian with its many tribes or nations. When I use the word nations on Indian tribes, it might say that international law says that no one can make a treaty with anyone else except a nation. So when the first white settlers started coming to this continent, and they've before our present form of government, they signed over 800 treaties with the Indian people. International law says that they considered each Indian tribe as much a nation as England, France, America, United States, or any of the others. No state can make a treaty according to international law, no county, no city, only nations. So when we looked at actually pre-white contact, there were over 2,000 Indian tribes on the North American continent, and every tribe was proud of who they were. The Hopi were proud to be Hopi. The Kalas pride that they're proud that they are Kalas. So you're right on. You're right on.
Good question, Danny. Really good discussion. Yes. Appreciate your input. Anyone else?
Bossy. Yes. I have one question.
Marcia.
At the end, Roy, did you say the Modoc call themselves children of the grizzly?
What about the grizzlies?
Did the Modocs call themselves children of the grizzlies?
I have a feeling, and the legend doesn't say that, but okay. It's less intimidating. That's basically what it's saying, because when they say that she had many children and they were grizzlies. And I got a feeling what they're saying is that they are grizzly people. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Question.
I don't know the Modoc actual name, how they identify themselves except as Modoc. But what I do know is that every tribe that I do know of, in their language, the name of their title means the people. All of them. Who are you? We are the people. But the thing that makes it different between the many tribes is that they usually have a little more to say about it. They are usually saying something about who they are as the people. For example, the Hopi Indians. That word Hopi, translated to English, means the people from down under. The Kalats means the people who seek their medicine spirit, or the spirit-seeking people. And so I would say that, and this is an assumption, which I do not know for sure, but knowing the tendency of this, the Modoc would be saying, we are the grizzly bear people.
Good question. Thank you. I think Cindy has a question for you.
Actually, Tom had his hand up. Tom has
Go ahead, Tom.
So grandfather?
Yes.
Can you read us the, is there a foreword to your book?
The foreword to my book.
Yes.
In this particular book, I have an introduction, but not a foreword, because the foreword is always written by someone other than the author of the book. The author will write the preface or the introduction, and I had no one write a foreword for this. In the introduction, would you want that?
Yes, please. Some of it, anyways.
Okay, let's see if I get this open and get my magnifying glass. Introduction. Native American Indian spirituality is very metaphysical. Metaphysics, as experienced in Native American Indian spirituality, asserts that spirit is basic to everything that exists. Therefore, it is important to understand the spiritual metaphysical understanding of the four-leggeds, the wingeds, the swimmers, the crawlers, the stone people, and the green people. Native American metaphysical understandings reveal a belief in the fact that these structure of things in general offers to us a process of knowing the spiritual world within ourselves and provides methods of talking about our universe that becomes meaningful for our own individual journeys in life. Therefore, it is important to understand the spiritual metaphysical understanding of the various life forms, for when we are attracted to any of these life forms, we need to beware that they are being attracted to kindred spiritual attitudes within ourselves. For example, we learn more about the bear or the beaver within us when we learn about the spirit of the bear or the spiritual, the beaver. When we study the medicine wheel, we learn that we are the wheel and the wheel is us. That all of these spirit forms are within each of us. We can learn how to keep the wheel of our own personal lives in balance once we connect to understand the many spirit powers that are within each of us. Again, when we study the ancient tribal legends, we discover that we are the legend and the legend is us. The bear, the raven, the coyote, in the legend are the bear, the raven, the coyote within us. The animals And these legends are people, bear people, raven people, coyote people, etc. Here in the Pacific Northwest, when we as Native American Indian people go on the vision quest, we are seeking our tomonomos, that is, our medicine spirit or our spirit guide. If bear, raven, hawk, butterfly, or any other life form comes to us, it is speaking to us in spirit form. We can better understand what is happening if we understand the spiritual, metaphysical understandings of the many life forms. And we must continually remember the stone people are very much alive. Paul the Apostle alludes to this concept in Romans 1, chapter 1, verse 20, where he says, quote, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead." We can clearly know God by the things that are made. The four-leggeds, the wingeds, the swimmers, the crawlers, the green people, the stone people. And God created us in his image. Therefore, we can also understand the spiritual powers that are residual within us by the things that are made. And I conclude it with this statement: enjoy your spiritual journey. That's the introduction. Mm-hmm.
Very
grandfather,
nice.
Grandfather, is this a reprint?
I will say this, that you will not have to pay the retail price on it. I will just sell this book to you for what it cost me to have it published. Just at the cost of publishing, that'd be $10.
Mm.
Go ahead,
Grandfather, is this a reprint?
Pardon?
Did you update it and reprint it?
I had Gorham printed it for me. Gorham Press.
No.
I'm printing in.
Did you reprint it? Is this a reprint?
Yes, yes. If you have known me for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
I wrote a book about 20 years ago or so, and I printed a few copies, so not many, maybe 50 copies, on 8.5 by 11. Went to Staples and had them run them off, and then I bound them with my own coil machine. And finally here recently I said, I haven't had any copies of that except my one archive copy. It's time, but it was still in my computer. So I said, it's time to republish it and have it printed in a way that it can just get more copies whenever I need them. So it's an old book that's just newly published.
Wow. Congratulations. That's fine work, Grandfather.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. We have a language lesson tonight taught by Marcia and by Laura. And we are ready to jump into that. It should be exciting. So here we go. I turn it over to you, Marcia, and to you, Laura.
I have a question before we get started.
Sure.
About, because we know that Laura's Indian name is Rainbow, many colors. But Marcia, what is your Indian name? I don't think we've heard that. Have we?
Yeah, we have.
What is it?
Tall cedar woman or red cedar something. Because her sister is Sequoia.
Go ahead, Marcia.
Thank you.
I might speak here and say that the reason I named Marcia's sister Sequoia, out of those five sisters, Sequoia, she's a lot taller than all the rest. She's a real tall woman. And so, Sequoia.
And she likes that name a lot. She really adopted that name immediately. But my name, the way I say it, I would say it in languages, Highest Pill Satawe. And that is tall. Highest is for tall. Pill is red. And Satawe is a Cowlitz word for cedar. Because we don't have a word in jargon specifically for cedar. You know, I don't want to call myself a stick. That doesn't sound romantic. So I asked Michael Hubbs, our Cowlitz language expert, and he told me Satawe. And so that's what I adopted, is Highest Pill Satawe, tall red cedar woman. And so I leave off the woman part. I don't want it to be that long. So I just say tall red cedar. And the story I told before about that was that there's lots of different ways you can get your Indian name. Like Roy has given Indian names to many people. Or you can ask your elders in your family for a name, particularly if you want to use a name that's been used before. Or you can, let's say, propose your own name. So I was at a Medicine Wheel event here on the Key Peninsula where I live years ago with Roy and lots of people sitting in a big circle. And it was evening, I think, or late afternoon. And I just looked up and there we were ringed by cedar trees. And it just came to me, tall red cedar woman. So I actually gave myself that name.
Good.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Uh-huh.
A little bit about name giving. Then the process is different in different tribes. But in the Cowlitz tribe, if you're to receive a name, the old ancient tradition and culture was the name had to be given to you by your elders of your own clan. In other words, where Marcia and I are both descended from Munequatnam Sklawau, it would be elders of these descendants would give us our Indian name. In some tribes, it's given by the medicine man or the shaman of the tribe. In different tribes, go different kinds of ways. So when I have people come to me who are non-Indian and they want an Indian name, I say, well, I'll give you a spirit name. That's saying the same thing. But then I cannot give you a spirit name off the cuff. That would be very fraudulent. In the Indian world, your name would be given to you because it resembles something in your life. Like Marcia was saying, the cedar. If you take, for example, there was a boy growing up and he had a lame foot. The odds are his name was going to be Lamefoot. if you have never received your Indian or your spirit name, non-Indian people, I can give those names to you. But I have to know you real well, get acquainted with all your likes and dislikes and so forth before I discover who you are. In other words, I never give you a name. You already have that name. But I just make you aware of it is by doing the ceremony declaring that is your name. So much for name giving.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, let's jump into our lesson.
All right. Well, tonight, Cindy and Penny are going to do a conversation with us. And Marcia had brought up the idea about, you know, hearing is one way of learning. Seeing something is another way of learning. Touching something's a way of learning. Participating is a way of learning. And she had thought that since many jargon words are not really familiar with us, and it's hard for us sometimes to hear something, that it would be good to see it written down. Well, Penny did that. I think maybe she talked to Marcia. So anyway, I hope that all of you have a printout of the conversation so that when they do it, we can follow along. Did everyone get a copy?
Nope.
Danny, Dorothy, did you get a copy?
Yes, I read it and I made notes, but I couldn't copy it.
Oh, okay, cool.
But I did go to the library today and copied out everything else.
Wonderful. You don't have a printer?
It's broken.
Oh, they're not too expensive.
Yeah, that's what...
Anyway...
Okay.
our time is running out quickly, so let's turn it over to Penny and Cindy. And thank you. This is their first conversation, so I think all of us have got our feet wet now. And take it away.
Okay. So I guess we should go over what we believe are the new words. So the three new words is, the first one is, and you guys can tell us if this is right, but TOLTH, I believe, T-O-L-T-H, which is home. The second one is HULOIMA, which is H-U-L-O-I-M-A, HULOIMA, which means different. Mm-hmm. And the last one is KIMTA, which is K-I-M-T-A-H, which we use for after, the word after. It also means since or behind, something behind you, so KIMTA. So those are the three words that we think are new words. So, okay.
Plahau ya, Cindy. Naika yudal nisaika mash mika mama kopa ilahi yaka klatawa tolth. I'm glad we took your mom's ashes home.
Naika, I changed this one to Kwan. Naika Kwan Micah P. Joanne Chaco. Naika Sik Tum Tum Klosh Tom Tom Tilakum Kopa Naika. I happy you and Joanne come. I feel good. Heart friends with me is the tanto that we used. So Naika Sik Tum Kum Tum Klosh Tum Tum Tilakum, which is heart friends, Kopa Naika with me.
Cindy, why did you use the word sick?
Because we looked up the word feel and it said Sik Tum Tum. So with the dictionary in our book. So I don't know if that's we didn't classify that really as a new word. Is that not what we should have used?
I always think sick refers to something negative, like being sick.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Like a tum tum.
What would you use?
Well, I would,
because it says
you have the word tum, you have the word tum tum there twice, and I don't even think you need tum tum twice.
I know. But yeah. There's two definitions or two translations. They have feel with a hand, so you know, with a hand is kamtax kopa le ma, and then right. they have feel with your heart is sik tum tum.
So, but you could say like you. I'm glad you changed the word yosh to kwan.
Yeah.
And you could say, again, here you could say, Kwan, I'm glad, good friends with me. Oh, so you don't have to say, I feel, because you're expressing that in the gladness. That's your feeling. That I mean, I think there's several ways to say anything in jargon, mm-hmm. But that would be one simplified way.
So you would say, I, Nika Klosh, Tum Tum Tilakum. Open Nika?
Well, I would say Nika Kwan, I'm glad.
But I already said Kwan, you know, I said.
It's okay.
It's okay to say it. Okay.
Because this is a jargon. So any word covers, you know, the most words in this jargon is 1,500 at the very max. Okay. Mm-hmm. How many words in the English language? Probably 30, 40,000. I don't know.
Right.
So we don't have the refinements, so it's okay to repeat, you know, I'm glad that you were with me. I'm glad good friends were with me.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I would say Nika Kwan Klosh Tum Tum Tilakan Kopa Nika then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Nika clap. Tum tum, Masaika mama, Mimalus moxt, yeah, and Cuddy. Mm-hmm. I remember your mom passed 2 years past.
Died. Mimalus died, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Died, yeah. Died 2 years past.
Okay. Yaka, Hayu, Lali, Mamuk Kopet, and Kais or stone.
That's not a word I've heard before.
The Kais, K-A-I-S?
Yeah.
That was a hard one to come up with.
So we looked up stone and it had either stone or K-A-I-S, mm-hmm. Kais.
We were looking for something that you commemorate a burial with.
Right.
Man, it was hard.
Like a monument or a marker.
Marker, mm-hmm. Right.
So what book did you get Kais from?
This one.
The Wawa.
Chinook Wawa.
Okay. And it was under stone?
Under stone, yeah.
Because that's one I think I've encountered before.
Okay. I've not heard it either, but I'm looking it up.
Okay. So then...
I myself would just use stone because it's a headstone, mm-hmm. You know, like a grave marker.
Yeah, it's just a marker.
And stone. Rock is stone, stone is stone, mm-hmm. You know. Because we're trying to streamline this. Because mm-hmm. there are a lot of words that were used once upon a time. Mm-hmm. But they're not used hardly at all anymore. And you spell that K-A-I-S?
Mm-hmm. K-A-I-S, yeah.
J-J-K-H-I. Yeah, see, in the dictionary part, it's not there. So that is an alternative, probably lesser used word for stone. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just not a common word. That's all.
Okay.
Page 309.
You found it?
Page 309.
Yes. Oh yeah, for stone, but it's not in the jargon half of the dictionary.
Right.
No, it's not in the jargon half of the dictionary. Unless we go to stone.
Please.
Let me see what stone says.
Hi, grandfather.
Just wanted to break in very, very briefly. First of all, before I say Klahalia, I want to express my deep, deep, deep feelings of awe as I am watching what you are doing. I am so full of gratitude for every one of you. You are so doing so exceptionally well. Thank you, Marcia and Laura, for what you're doing, but thank you, Cindy, Penny, and all the rest of you, for what, how you are really picking up on this jargon. You are amazing me. You are amazing people. And now before I say Klahalia, I want to share this. My wife's mother, most of you know, she lives with us. Today, we are celebrating her 100th birthday today.
Wow. Oh, that's fabulous.
Wow.
Well, thank you. Monarch.
Klahalia.
Klahalia, grandfather.
Klahalia.
Wow. 100.
Okay, I'm looking at stone in the dictionary part. And Caius is not a word there. So when we use a word in our jargon, even though it might be in the English part of it, I would encourage you to go to the dictionary part of it and see if you can find it there to back it up.
Good idea.
Because I don't know where it, you know, where it came from. I don't know. Because it's not under stone, and it's not under what else was I looking for? I don't know. Oh, I was looking for the word Caius, and it's not in there.
I saw it on page 309.
But that's in the English side, and we're saying find it in both find it in the English side and the jargon side to make sure to confirm that that's the right usage. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
So might we substitute there?
Just stone. Stone.
Stone is stone. And it's a gravestone, a headstone, a marker. And it's made of stone, so I think stone would be okay.
Or you could call it Memalu stone.
Mm-hmm.
That would work.
Yep.
Memalu Caius?
No, Memalu stone.
Oh, stone, okay.
Yeah.
Because it's a stone that has to do with the dead, so.
Gotcha. Okay, that's where we were trying to get, but we couldn't in English work our way quite around that far.
Mm-hmm. So, because you said it has taken a long time to get her stone completed, so I would use stone. If you would say her headstone or grave marker or something, then I would say Memalu stone. But you just said here, it takes a long time to get her stone completed. So I would just use stone.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Penny.
Did we finish? Oh, we didn't.
Nope. You got a couple more sentences yet.
And Cuddy Illahi Klosh, Kimitlai Wallace Klosh. Her cemetery is beautiful, and spending a few days in Wallace was nice.
So I don't know if we've had the word toktai before, but an alternate word to
Ankati
Ilahi Klosh. You could say Ankati Ilahi Toktai, which means pretty.
Can you spell that?
T-O-K. E-T-I-E.
Or the late toktai, which would be even prettier, so that would be more like beautiful. And then I had brought up to them, Marcia, about they used Ankuti Ilahi for the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And they knew about Memelus Ilahi, but they chose Ankuti Ilahi. What are your thoughts on that?
So ancient land, beautiful. Okay, if you want to use Ankuti, I'd say Ankuti Tilakam Ilahi. So the old people's land,
yeah,
is beautiful.
Ancestors' land.
In other words, ancestors, Ankuti. Uh-huh. So Tilakam.
Nice.
If you wanted to use that, I would definitely put Tilakam in there, because otherwise you're just talking about the ancient land.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about ancient people.
Right, right. Good point. Good point.
And I think that sounds very pretty, too. I think it sounds like a beautiful phrase.
Instead of like a...
Ankuti Tilakam Ilahi?
Dead earth or something like that. You know.
Okay. Go ahead, Cindy, just because we're just about out of time.
I'm
having so much fun.
You only got one sentence left.
Now, Witka, Wallace Hulo'ima Alta Kimta Quinum Totlam Yes.
So you don't have to put an S on yeah. There's not, we don't have plurals.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So yeah.
You can leave that S
yeah.
off.
So it's just yeah.
So was Wallace like in Wallace, Idaho? Is that we're talking about, or a place in Washington?
Yeah, Wallace, Idaho.
Okay. Okay. Good. Well, I would go, I think this is really good, you guys. It's fun. But in the your very first exchange, the word Toth, that's a word that's new to me. For I know you used it to mean home. It's just a word I haven't seen. I haven't ever seen before. So
I would just use house.
But okay. So for that, then they want to give the notion of home in spirit.
Yeah.
You know, to go home in spirit.
Right.
Is that what you were thinking?
That's what I was reading into it.
Yeah.
Then maybe you'd want to talk about Sahali Ilahi. You know, she went to the above land, above.
There you go.
You know.
Yeah.
Because you know, we took her mom's ashes. Well, wait a minute. Are you talking about you took your mom's ashes home to Wallace?
Yes.
Oh, so then we
okay.
could
see.
What so it's kind of a spiritual thing, but T-O-L-T-H is not in the other part. I was not aware that this book was not, I thought if I looked up the English word that I could use the Indian word, so we can't use the word Tolth either because that's not in the Indian part of it.
It's just we've gotten really accustomed in our
but
work
we
to,
have
to finding it both places.
Yeah, but you know, there's the spirit.
I wasn't aware of that.
The spirit of the message, because when you're talking about going, taking her ashes, well, no, you're talking about going to Wallace, Idaho. You could say maybe we took your mom's ashes where she grew up to where she, you know, I don't know.
Elip Mitlight. They could say Elip Mitlight.
Yeah.
If that's what you want to express, you know, we have to think about what you want to express. What's the important
now,
thought?
I think you were talking about the physical place, weren't you, Cindy?
I just wanted to say
where
we were taking her home.
Live.
So
yeah.
She grew up there. We were just taking her home. Mom went home. And it's kind of a metaphor for, you know, she went home and she went home, basically.
Well,
so you could say Copa Yakish Klatawa Kopa Elip. We wouldn't say Elip House. I guess we could say Elip House to first home.
Mm-hmm.
Or Elip Mitlight. First living place. What feels right to you, Cindy?
I don't know. Honestly.
All right.
I really don't know.
Did it have two meanings for you? Because mm-hmm. a lot of people say when you die, you go home.
Right.
That's what
right.
I was saying. Right. I was trying to say kind of in one sentence that she went home and she went home, but whatever right. it is.
Well, right.
It doesn't matter.
You could say Yaka Tomanawas Slatwa Kopa home.
Her spirit go home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's her spirit. That's her spirit home.
I've got to leave. I got another thing at 7. Okay. Well, hi, everyone.
Well,
hi, Dorothy.
On the second line, you use the word Chaco. I would have used Klatwa because Chaco means to come. He says, I'm happy you and Joanne went. So, Nika Yosh Mika P. Joanne Klatwa, you went.
Unless she's trying to say, come with me, came with me.
Is there a past tense? Does Morgan speak in past tense?
There's no past tense, no past tense.
So, went is not even a word. It's.
What's that?
We couldn't say went because there's no past tense.
But they were traveling to go to, when you went, you're leaving one place, going to another.
To go, okay.
Gotcha. So then that falls under Klatwa.
But if she
because
wants to say.
Chaco means to come or become, to transform something.
Well, we're going to have to end this, but that was a lively discussion, and I so appreciate
it. And it's very, very good. I mean, you guys
excellent.
Really tackled heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah,
well, that's, you my know, this, this, that's my friend Cindy. That's my friend Cindy. She's not afraid to tackle it.
There is another word in here that you use that's not in our dictionary yet, and that's mosh. And that means to put something down or get rid of something. Mm-hmm. And that's a new word.
And,
we already
and you used
had
it correctly.
Huloima and.
And they used that correctly. What? That was a good job. You did great.
Wonderful job.
Cindy, let me high five you.
High five. Right through the screen.
I'm going to mute here while my phone rings.
I know if her mom and dad were living, they'd be in this class. They were so involved in the Native culture and language and culture and just exceptional. Did you ever meet?
I'll say something about a grandfather's story today. The word, one of the words for grizzly bear is Siam, just like the old country of Siam.
Oh.
And yeah, there's several bears, but it can also be Itzwoot. And but it's Siam is definitely a grizzly bear. And it seemed to me, I read it somewhere, I don't know whether it was Dwayne Pasco or what, because I can't find it in here, but Siam was also the great leader, the chief of the village. He was, he was the grizzly bear, because grizzly bears were really respected. And people and bears have always had a history of interchanging. It used to be that bears could be people or they could be bears, they just switch back and forth. And finally, one day creator said, enough, I'm tired of you changing back and forth all the time. You've got to decide today. Are you going to be a people or are you going to be a bear? But if you ever see a bear skinned, it looks like a human, the muscle structure. When I was married to my first husband, we had a pack of hounds, and we shot my husband shot a bear, and I went to the barn where they had skinned it, and it was hanging up by its paws, and I'll tell you, it looked like a human hanging there. So I can see why they always thought that humans and bears, you know, were very, very closely related. And then one of the things medicine people used to do was follow bears and watch what they ate. If a bear ate it, a human could eat it.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being a part of the Storytelling Hour. To the people in this room and the people who will be visiting in the future. I'm grateful to my partner, Cindy. I'm grateful to Tom for editing and tech support, and to all of you for joining us on this journey. Klahauya.
Klahauya.
Okay. So, thank you. Thank you, thank you. That was wonderful.
So did Cindy go away?
It looks like she had to go away. It's pretty late where she lives.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder.
Yeah, it's after 10 o'clock back there.
Penny, I wondered if you and she wanted to update your conversation before we put it into the archive. Changes we made, or maybe we should talk about it again next time. I don't know.
Maybe you and I could connect on that after or tomorrow.
Yeah, we could do it tomorrow. That'd be fine.
Yeah, let's do it tomorrow. Then we'll let everybody.
All right.
We'll get.
And what's happening next Thursday?
You know, I have not heard from Johnny. You think we could get him to do a conversation? I doubt it.
I don't think he wanted to. I think in fact, a lot of times he just listens to grandfathers and just then drops out.
That's true.
Yeah,
he wanted to be in the loop as far as material I'll send.
And he wants to listen.
But I didn't get the.
Marcia and Danny, would you be willing to talk to us next week?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Sure. I was going to say, Johnny said he's learning Spanish right now, and it'd be too confusing.
Well, I think the two go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So.